August 25th, St. Louis, King. The mother of Louis told him she would rather see him die than commit a mortal sin, and he never forgot her words. King of France, at the age of 12, he made the defense of God's honor the aim of his life. Before 2 years, he had crushed the Albigensian heretics and forced them by stringent penalties to respect the Catholic faith. Amidst the cares of government, he daily recited the divine office and heard 2 masses, and the most glorious churches in France are still monuments of his piety. When his courtiers remonstrated with Louis for his law that blasphemers should be branded on the lips, he replied, "I would willingly have my own lips branded to root out blasphemy from my kingdom." The fearless protector of the weak and the oppressed, he was chosen to arbitrate in all the great feuds of his age, between the Pope and the Emperor, between Henry III and the English barons. In 1248, to rescue the land which Christ had trod, he gathered round him the chivalry of France and embarked for the East. There, before the infidel, in victory or defeat, on the bed of sickness or a captive in chains, Louis showed himself ever the same, the first, the best, and the bravest of Christian knights. When a captive at Damietta, an emir rushed into his tent brandishing a dagger red with the blood of the Sultan and threatened to stab him also unless he would make him a knight, as the Emperor Frederick had Fakhreddin. Louis calmly replied that no unbeliever could perform the duties of a Christian knight. In the same captivity, he was offered his liberty on terms of lawful in themselves, but enforced by an oath which implied a blasphemy. And though the infidels held their sword points at his throat and threatened a massacre of the Christians, Louis inflexibly refused. The death of his mother recalled him to France, but when order was reestablished, he again set forth on a second crusade. In August 1270, his army landed at Tunis, and though victorious over the enemy, succumbed to a malignant fever. Louis was one of the victims. He received the viaticum, kneeling by his camp bed, and gave up his life with the same joy that he had given all else for the honor of God. Reflection. If we cannot imitate St. Louis in dying for the honor of God, we can at least resemble him in resenting the blasphemies offered against God by the infidel, the heretic, and the scoffer. August 26th, St. Zephyrinus, Pope and Martyr. St. Zephyrinus, a native of Rome, succeeded Victor in the pontificate in the year 202, in which Severus raised the 5th most bloody persecution against the Church, which continued not for 2 years only, but until the death of that emperor in 211. Under this furious storm, this holy pastor was the support and comfort of the distressed flock of Christ, and he suffered by charity and compassion what every confessor underwent. The triumphs of the martyrs were indeed his joy, but his heart received many deep wounds from the fall of apostates and heretics. Neither did this latter affliction cease when peace was restored to the Church. Our saint had also the affliction to see the fall of Tertullian, which seems to have been owing partly to his pride. Eusebius tells us that this holy pope exerted his zeal so strenuously against the blasphemies of the heretics that they treated him in the most contemptuous manner. But it was his glory that they called him the principal defender of Christ's divinity. St. Zephyrinus filled the pontifical chair 17 years, dying in 219. He was buried in his own cemetery on the 26th of August. He is, in some martyrologies, styled a martyr, which title he might deserve by what he suffered in the persecution, though he perhaps did not die by the executioner. Reflection. God has always raised up holy pastors zealous to maintain the faith of his Church inviolable and to watch over the purity of its morals and the sanctity of its discipline. We enjoy the greatest advantages of the divine grace through their labors, and we owe to God a tribute of perpetual thanksgiving and immortal praise for all those mercies which he has afforded his church on earth. August 27th, St. Joseph Calasanctus was born in Aragon, A.D. 1556. When only 5 years old, he led a troop of children through the streets to find the devil and kill him. He became a priest and was engaged in various reforms when he heard a voice saying, "Go to Rome," and had a vision of many children who were being taught by him and by a company of angels. When he reached the holy city, his heart was moved by the vice and the ignorance of the children of the poor. Their need mastered his humility, and he founded the orders of clerks regular of the pious schools. He himself provided all that was necessary for the education of the children, receiving nothing from them in payment, and there were soon about 1,000 scholars of every rank under his care. Each lesson began with prayer. Every half hour, devotion was renewed by acts of faith, hope, and charity. And towards the end of school time, the children were instructed in the Christian doctrine. They were then escorted home by the masters so as to escape all harm by the way. But enemies arose against Joseph from among his own subjects. They accused him to the Holy Office, and at the age of 86 he was led through the streets to prison. At last the order was reduced to a simple congregation. It was not restored to its former privileges till after the saint's death. Yet he died full of hope. "My work," he said, "was done solely for the love of God." Reflection. "My children," said the curé of Ars, "I often think that most of the Christians who are lost for want of instruction. They do not know their religion well." August 28th, St. Augustine of Hippo. St. Augustine was born in 354 at Tagaste in Africa. He was brought up in the Christian faith, but without receiving baptism. An ambitious schoolboy of brilliant talents and violent passions, he early lost both his faith and his innocence. He persisted in his irregular life until he was 32. Being then at Milan professing rhetoric, he tells us that the faith of his childhood had regained possession of his intellect, but that he could not as yet resolve to break the chains of evil habit. One day, however, stung to the heart by the account of some sudden conversions, he cried out, "The unlearned rise and storm heaven, and we, with all our learning, for lack of heart, lie wallowing here." He then withdrew into a garden, when a long and terrible conflict ensued. Suddenly, a young fresh voice, he knows not whose, breaks in upon his strife with the words, "Take and read," and he lights upon the passage beginning, "Walk honestly as in the day." The battle was won. He received baptism, returned home, and gave all to the poor. At Hippo, where he settled, he was consecrated bishop in 395. For 35 years he was the center of ecclesiastical life in Africa, and the church's mightiest champion against heresy. Whilst his writings have been everywhere accepted as one of the principal sources of devotional thought and theological speculation. He died in 430. Reflection. Read the lives of the saints, and you will find that you are gradually creating a society about you to which, in some measure, you will be forced to raise the standard of your daily life. August 29th. The beheading of St. John the Baptist. St. John the Baptist was called by God to be the forerunner of his divine Son. In order to preserve his innocence spotless and to improve the extraordinary graces which he had received, he was directed by the Holy Ghost to lead an austere and contemplative life in the wilderness, in the continual exercises of devout prayer and penance from his infancy till he was 30 years of age. At this age, the faithful minister began to discharge his mission. Clothed with the weeds of penance, he announced to all men the obligation they lay under of washing away their iniquities with the tears of sincere compunction, and proclaimed the Messiah, who was then coming to make his appearance among them. He was received by the people as the true herald of the Most High God, and his voice was, as it were, a trumpet sounding from heaven to summon all men to avert the divine judgments and to prepare themselves to reap the benefit of the mercy that was offered them. The Tetrarch Herod Antipas, having, in defiance of all laws, divine and human, married Herodias, the wife of his brother Philip, who was yet living, St. John the Baptist boldly reprehended the Tetrarch and his accomplice for so scandalous an incest and adultery, and Herod, urged on by lust and anger, cast the saint into prison. About a year after St. John had been made a prisoner, Herod gave a splendid entertainment to the nobility of Galilee. Salome, a daughter of Herodias by her lawful husband, pleased Herod by her dancing, insomuch that he promised her to grant whatever she asked. On this, Salome consulted with her mother what to ask. Herodias instructed her daughter to demand the death of John the Baptist, and persuaded the young damsel to make it a part of her petition that the head of the prisoner should be forthwith brought to her in a dish. This strange request startled the tyrant himself. He assented, however, and sent a soldier of his guard to behead the saint in prison, with an order to bring his head in a charger and present it to Salome, who delivered it to her mother. St. Jerome relates that the furious Herodias made it her inhuman pastime to prick the sacred tongue with a bodkin. Thus died the great forerunner of our blessed Savior, about 2 years and 3 months after his entrance upon his public ministry, about a year before the death of our blessed Redeemer. Reflection. All the high graces with which St. John was favored sprang from his humility. In this, all his other virtues were founded. If we desire to form ourselves upon so great a model, we must, above all things, labor to lay the same deep foundation. August 30th, St. Rose of Lima. This lovely flower of sanctity, the first canonized saint of the New World, was born at Lima in 1586. She was christened Isabel, but the beauty of her infant face earned for her the title of Rose, which she ever after bore. As a child, while still in the cradle, her silence under a painful surgical operation proved the thirst for suffering already consuming her heart. At an early age, she took service to support her impoverished parents and work for them day and night. In spite of hardships and austerities, her beauty ripened with increasing age, and she was much and openly admired. From fear of vanity, she cut off her hair, blistered her face with pepper, and her hands with lime. For further security, she enrolled herself in the Third Order of St. Dominic, took St. Catherine of Siena as her model, and redoubled her penance. Her cell was a garden hut, her couch a box of broken tiles. Under her habit, Rose wore a hair shirt studded with iron nails, while concealed by her veil, a silver crown armed with 90 points encircled her head. More than once, when she shuddered at the prospect of a night of torture, a voice said, "My cross was yet more painful." The Blessed Sacrament seemed almost her only food. Her love for it was intense. When the Dutch fleet prepared to attack the town, Rose took her place before the tabernacle and wept that she was not worthy to die in its defense. All her sufferings were offered for the conversion of sinners, and the thought of the multitudes in hell was ever before her soul. She died A.D. 1617 at the age of 31. Reflection. Rose, pure as driven snow, was filled with deepest contrition and humility, and did constant and terrible penance. Our sins are continual, our repentance passing. Our contrition slight, our penance nothing. How will it fare with us? August 31st, St. Raymond Nonatus. St. Raymond Nonatus was born at Catalonia in the year 1204 and was descended of a gentleman's family of a small fortune. In his childhood, he seemed to find pleasure only in his devotions and serious duties. His father, perceiving in him an inclination to a religious state, took him from school and sent him to take care of a farm which he had in the country. Raymond readily obeyed, and in order to enjoy the opportunity of holy solitude, kept the sheep to himself and spent his time in the mountains and forests in holy meditation and prayer. Some time after, he joined the new order of Our Lady of Mercy for the redemption of captives, and was admitted to his profession at Barcelona by the holy founder, St. Peter Nolasco. Within 2 or 3 years after his profession, he was sent into Barbary with a considerable sum of money, where he purchased at Algiers the liberty of a great number of slaves. When all his treasure was exhausted, he gave himself up as a hostage for the ransom of certain others. This magnanimous sacrifice served only to exasperate the Mohammedans, who treated him with uncommon barbarity, till fearing lest if he died in their hands they should lose the ransom which was to be paid for the slaves for whom he remained a hostage, they gave orders that he should be treated with more humanity. Hereupon he was permitted to go abroad about the streets, which liberty he made use of to comfort and encourage the Christians in their chains, and he converted and baptized some Mohammedans. For this, the governor condemned him to be put to death by thrusting a stake into the body, but his punishment was commuted, and he underwent a cruel bastinado. This torment did not daunt his courage. So long as he saw souls in danger of perishing eternally, he thought he had yet done nothing. St. Raymond had no more money to employ in releasing poor captives, and to speak to a Mohammedan upon the subject of religion was death. He could, however, still exert his endeavors with hopes of some success or of dying a martyr of charity. He therefore resumed his former method of instructing and exhorting both the Christians and the infidels. The governor, who was enraged, ordered our saint to be barbarously tortured and imprisoned till his ransom was brought by some religious men of his order, who were sent with it by St. Peter. Upon his return to Spain, he was nominated cardinal by Pope Gregory IX, and the Pope, being desirous of having so holy a man about his person, called him to Rome. The saint obeyed, but went no further than Cardona, when he was seized with a violent fever, which proved mortal. He died on the 31st of August, in the year 1240, the 37th of his age. Reflection. This saint gave not only his substance, but his liberty, and even exposed himself to the most cruel torments and death for the redemption of captives and the salvation of souls. But alas, do not we, merely to gratify our prodigality, vanity, or avarice, refuse to give the superfluous part of our possessions to the poor, who for want of it are perishing with cold and hunger? Let us remember that he that giveth to the poor shall not want. September 1st, St. Giles, Abbot. St. Giles, whose name has been held in great veneration for several ages in France and England, is said to have been an Athenian by birth and of noble extraction. His extraordinary piety and learning drew the admiration of the world upon him in such a manner that it was impossible for him to enjoy in his own country that obscurity and retirement which was the chief object of his desires on earth. He therefore sailed to France and chose a hermitage, first in the open deserts near the mouth of the Rhone, afterward near the river Gard, and lastly in the forest in the diocese of Nismes. He passed many years in this close solitude, living on wild herbs or roots and water, and conversing only with God. We read in his life that he was for some time nourished with the milk of a hind in the forest, which, being pursued by hunters, fled for refuge to the saint who was thus discovered. The reputation of the sanctity of this holy hermit was much increased by many miracles which he wrought, and which rendered his name famous throughout all France. St. Giles was highly esteemed by the French king, but could not be prevailed upon to forsake his solitude. He, however, admitted several disciples and settled excellent discipline in the monastery of which he was the founder, and which in succeeding ages became a flourishing abbey of the Benedictine order. Reflection. He who accompanies the exercises of contemplation and arduous penance with zealous and undaunted endeavors to conduct others to the same glorious term with himself shall be truly great in the kingdom of heaven. September 2nd, St. Stephen, King. Gaisa, 4th Duke of Hungary, was, with his wife, converted to the faith, and saw in a vision the martyr St. Stephen, who told him that he should have a son who would perfect the work he had begun. This son was born A.D. 977 and received the name of Stephen. He was most carefully educated and succeeded his father at an early age. He began to root out idolatry, suppressed a rebellion of his pagan subjects, and founded monasteries and churches all over the land. He sent to Pope Sylvester, begging him to appoint bishops to the 11 sees he had endowed, and to bestow on him, for the greater success of his work, the title of king. The Pope granted his requests and sent him a cross to be borne before him, saying that he regarded him as the true apostle of his people. His devotion was fervent. He placed his realms under the protection of our Blessed Lady, and kept the feast of her Assumption with peculiar affection. He gave good laws and saw to their execution. Throughout his life, we are told, he had Christ on his lips, Christ in his heart, and Christ in all he did. His only wars were wars of defense, and he was always successful. God sent him many and sore trials. One by one his children died, but he bore all with perfect submission to the will of God. When St. Stephen was about to die, he summoned the bishops and nobles and gave them charge concerning the choice of a successor. Then he urged them to nurture and cherish the Catholic Church, which was still as a tender plant in Hungary, to follow justice, humility, and charity, and to be obedient to the laws, and to show ever a reverent submission to the Holy See. Then, raising his eyes toward heaven, he said, O Queen of Heaven, august restorer of a prostrate world, to thy care I commend the Holy Church, my people and my realm, and my own departing soul. And then, on his favorite feast of the Assumption, A.D. 1038, he died in peace. Reflection. Our duty, says Father Newman, is to follow the Vicar of Christ whither he goeth, and never to desert him, however we may be tried, but to defend him at all hazards and against all comers, as a son would a father, and as a wife a husband, knowing that his cause is the cause of God. September 3rd, Saint Seraphia, Virgin and Martyr. St. Seraphia was born at Antioch, of Christian parents, who, flying from the persecutions of Adrian, went to Italy and settled there. Her parents dying, Seraphia was sought in marriage by many, but having resolved to consecrate herself to God alone, she sold all her possessions and distributed the proceeds to the poor. Finally, she sold herself into a voluntary slavery and entered the service of a Roman lady named Sabina. The piety of Seraphia, her love of work, and her charity soon gained the heart of her mistress, who was not long in becoming a Christian. Having been denounced as a follower of Christ, Seraphia was condemned to death. She was at first placed on a burning pile, but remained uninjured by the flames. Almost despairing of being able to inflict death upon her, the prefect, Brilius, ordered her to be beheaded, and she thus received the crown which she so richly merited. Her mistress gathered her remains and interred them with every mark of respect. Sabina, meeting with a martyr's death a year after, was laid in the same tomb with her faithful servant. As early as the 5th century, there was a church at Rome placed under their invocation. Reflection. Christian courage bears relation to our faith. If we continue in the faith, grounded and settled and immovable, all things will be found possible to us. September 4th, Saint Rosalia, Virgin. Saint Rosalia was a daughter of a noble family descended from Charlemagne. She was born at Palermo in Sicily, and despising in her youth worldly vanities, made herself an abode in a cave on Mount Pellegrino, 3 miles from Palermo, where she completed the sacrifice of her heart to God by austere penance and manual labor, sanctified by assiduous prayer and the constant union of her soul with God. She died in 1160. Her body was found buried in a grotto under the mountain in the year of the Jubilee, 1625, under Pope Urban VIII, and was translated into the Metropolitan Church of Palermo, of which she was chosen a patroness. To her patronage, that island ascribes the ceasing of a grievous pestilence at the same time. Saint Rose of Viterbo, who was honored on this same day, was born in the spring of 1240, a time when Frederick II was oppressing the church and many were faithless to the Holy See. The infant at once seemed filled with grace. With tottering steps, she sought Jesus in his tabernacle. She knelt before sacred images. She listened to pious talk, retaining all she heard, and this when she was scarcely 3 years old. One coarse habit covered her flesh. Fasts and disciplines were her delight. To defend the church's rights was her burning wish, and for this she received her mission from the Mother of God, who gave her the Franciscan habit with a command to go forth and preach. When hardly 10 years old, Rose went down to the public square at Viterbo, called upon the inhabitants to be faithful to the sovereign pontiff, and vehemently denounced all his opponents. So great was the power of her word and of the miracles which accompanied it, that the imperial party, in fear and anger, drove her from the city, but she continued to preach till Innocent IV was brought back in triumph to Rome, and the cause of God was won. Then she retired to a little cell at Viterbo, and prepared in solitude for her end. She died in her 18th year. Not long after, she appeared in glory to Alexander IV, and bade him translate her body. He found it, as the vision had said, but fragrant and beautiful, as if still in life. Reflection. Rose lived but 17 years, saved the church's cause, and died a saint. We have lived, perhaps much longer, and yet with what result? Every minute something can be done for God. Let us be up and doing. September 5th, St. Lawrence Justinian. Lawrence, from a child, longed to be a saint, and when he was 19 years of age, there was granted to him a vision of the eternal wisdom. All earthly things paled in his eyes before the ineffable beauty of this sight, and as it faded away, a void was left in his heart which none but God could fill. Refusing the offer of a brilliant marriage, he fled secretly from his home at Venice and joined the canons regular of St. George. One by one, he crushed every natural instinct which could bar his union with his love. When Lawrence first entered religion, a nobleman went to dissuade him from the folly of thus sacrificing every earthly prospect. The young monk listened patiently in turn to his friend's affectionate appeal, scorn, and then violent abuse. Calmly and kindly, he then replied. He pointed out the shortness of life, the uncertainty of earthly happiness, and the incomparable superiority of the prize he sought to any his friend had named. The nobleman could make no answer. He felt in truth that Lawrence was wise, himself the fool. He left the world, became a fellow novice with the saint, and his holy death bore every mark that he too had secured the treasures which never fail. As superior and as general, Lawrence enlarged and strengthened his order, and as bishop of his diocese, in spite of slander and insult, thoroughly reformed his see. His zeal led to his being appointed the first patriarch of Venice, but he remained ever in heart and soul a humble priest, thirsting for the sight of heaven. At length the eternal vision began to dawn. "Are you laying a bed of feathers for me?" he said. "Not so. My Lord was stretched on a hard and painful tree." Laid upon the straw, he exclaimed in rapture, "Good Jesus, behold, I come." He died A.D. 1435, age 74. Reflection. Ask St. Lawrence to vouchsafe you such a sense of the sufficiency of God that you too may fly to him and be at rest. September 6th, St. Eleutherius, Abbot. A wonderful simplicity and spirit of compunction were the distinguishing virtues of this holy man. He was chosen abbot of St. Mark's near Spoleto, and favored by God with the gift of miracles. A child who was possessed by the devil, being delivered by being educated in his monastery, the abbot said one day, "Since the child is among the servants of God, the devil dares not approach him." These words seemed to savor of vanity, and thereupon the devil again entered and tormented the child. The abbot humbly confessed his fault, and fasted and prayed with his whole community till the child was again freed from the tyranny of the fiend. St. Gregory the Great, not being able to fast on Easter Eve on account of extreme weakness, engaged this saint to go with him to the church of St. Andrew's and put up his prayers to God for his health, that he might join the faithful in that solemn practice of penance. Eleutherius prayed with many tears, and the Pope, coming out of the church, found his breast suddenly strengthened, so that he was enabled to perform the fast as he desired. St. Eleutherius raised a dead man to life. Resigning his abbacy, he died in St. Andrew's Monastery in Rome, about the year 585. Reflection. Appear not to men to fast, but to thy Father who is in heaven, and thy Father who seeth in secret, he will repay thee. September 7th, St. Cloud, Confessor. St. Cloud is the first and most illustrious saint among the princes of the royal family of the first race in France. He was a son of Clodomir, King of Orleans, the eldest son of St. Clotilda, and was born in 522. He was scarce 3 years old when his father was killed in Burgundy, but his grandmother, Clotilda, brought him up and his two brothers at Paris, and loved them extremely. Their ambitious uncles divided the kingdom of Orleans between them, and stabbed with their own hands two of their nephews. Cloud, by a special providence, was saved from the massacre, and renouncing the world, devoted himself to the service of God in a monastic state. After a time, he put himself under the discipline of Saint Severinus, a holy recluse who lived near Paris, from whose hands he received the monastic habit. Wishing to live unknown to the world, he withdrew secretly into Provence, but his hermitage being made public, he returned to Paris and was received with the greatest joy imaginable. At the earnest request of the people, he was ordained priest by Eusebius, Bishop of Paris, in 551, and served that church some time in the functions of the sacred ministry. He afterward retired to St. Cloud, 2 leagues below Paris, where he built a monastery. There he assembled many pious men who fled out of the world for fear of losing their souls in it. St. Cloud was regarded by them as their superior, and he animated them to all virtue both by word and example. He was indefatigable instructing and exhorting people of the neighboring country, and piously ended his days about the year 560. Reflection. Let us remember that the just shall live forevermore. They shall receive a kingdom of glory and a crown of beauty at the hand of the Lord. September 8th, the Nativity of the Blessed Virgin. The birth of the Blessed Virgin Mary announced joy and the near approach of salvation to the lost world. Mary was brought forth in the world not like other children of Adam, infected with the loathsome contagion of sin, but pure, holy, beautiful, and glorious, adorned with all the most precious graces which became her who was chosen to be the Mother of God. She appeared indeed in the weak state of our mortality, but in the eyes of heaven she already transcended the highest seraph in purity, brightness, and the richest ornaments of grace. If we celebrate the birthdays of the great ones of this earth, how ought we to rejoice in that of the Virgin Mary, presenting to God the best homage of our praises and thanksgiving for the great mercies he has shown in her, and imploring her mediation with her Son in our behalf. Christ will not reject the supplications of his mother, whom he was pleased to obey whilst on earth. Her love, care, and tenderness for him, the title and qualities which she bears, the charity and graces with which she is adorned, and the crown of glory with which she is honored, must incline him readily to receive her recommendations and petitions. The festival on the Sunday within the octave of her nativity of the Holy Name of Mary. This festival was appointed by Pope Innocent XI, that on it the faithful may be called upon in a particular manner to recommend to God, through the intercession of the Blessed Virgin, the necessities of his Church, and to return him thanks for his gracious protection and numberless mercies. What gave occasion to the institution of this feast was a solemn thanksgiving for the relief of Vienna when it was besieged by the Turks in 1683. If we desire to deprecate the divine anger justly provoked by our sins with our prayers, we must join the tears of sincere compunction with a perfect conversion of our manners. The first grace we should always beg of God is that he will bring us to the disposition of penance. Our supplications for the divine mercies and our thanksgivings for benefits received will only thus be rendered acceptable. By no other means can we deserve the blessing of God or be recommended to it by the patronage of his Holy Mother. To the invocation of Jesus, it is a pious and wholesome practice to join our application to the Blessed Virgin, that through her intercession we may more easily and more abundantly obtain the effects of our petitions. In this sense, devout souls pronounce with great affection and confidence the holy names of Jesus and Mary. September 9th, Saint Omar, Bishop. Saint Omar was born toward the close of the 6th century in the territory of Constance. His parents, who were noble and wealthy, gave great attention to his education, but above all strove to inspire him with a love for virtue. Upon the death of his mother, he entered the monastery of Luxon, whither he persuaded his father to follow him, after having sold his worldly goods and distributed the proceeds among the poor. The father and son made their religious profession together. The humility, obedience, mildness, and devotion, together with the admirable purity of manners which shone forth in every action of Saint Omar, distinguished him among his saintly brethren, and he was soon called from his solitude to take charge of the government of the Church in Terhune. The greater part of those living in his diocese were still pagans, and even the few Christians were, through a scarcity of priests, fallen into a sad corruption of manners. The great and difficult work of their conversion was reserved for Saint Omar. The holy bishop applied himself to his task with such zeal that in a short time his diocese became one of the most flourishing in France. In his old age, Saint Omar became blind, but that affliction did not lessen his pastoral concern for his flock. He died in the odor of sanctity while on a pastoral visit in 670. Also on September 9th, Saint Peter Claver. Peter Claver was a Spanish Jesuit. In Majorca, he fell in with the holy lay brother, Alphonsus Rodriguez, who, having already learned by revelation the saintly career of Peter, became his spiritual guide, foretold to him the labors he would undergo in the Indies, and the throne he would gain in heaven. Ordained priest in New Granada, Peter was sent to Cartagena, the great slave mart of the West Indies, and there he consecrated himself by vow to the salvation of those ignorant and miserable creatures. For more than 40 years he labored in this work. He called himself the slave of the slaves. He was their apostle, father, physician, and friend. He fed them, nursed them with the utmost tenderness in their loathsome diseases, often applying his own lips to their hideous sores. His cloak, which was the constant covering of the naked, though soiled with their filthy ulcers, sent forth a miraculous perfume. His rest, after his great labors, was in nights of penance and prayer. However tired he might be, when news arrived of a fresh slave ship, St. Peter immediately revived, his eyes brightened, and he was at once on board amongst his dear slaves, bringing them comfort for body and soul. A false charge of reiterating baptism for a while stopped his work. He submitted without a murmur till the calumny was refuted, and then God so blessed his toil that 40,000 Negroes were baptized before he went to his reward in 1654. Reflection. When you see anyone standing in need of your assistance, either for body or soul, do not ask yourself why someone else did not help him, but think to yourself that you have found a treasure. September 10th, St. Nicholas of Tolentino. Born in answer to the prayer of a holy mother and vowed before his birth to the service of God, Nicholas never lost his baptismal innocence. His austerities were conspicuous even in the austere order, the Hermits of St. Augustine, to which he belonged, and to the remonstrances which were made by his superiors, he only replied, "How can I be said to fast, while every morning at the altar I receive my God?" He conceived an ardent charity for the holy souls, so near and yet so far from their Savior, and often, after his Mass, it was revealed to him that the souls for whom he had offered the holy sacrifice had been admitted to the presence of God. Amidst his loving labors for God and man, he was haunted by fear of his own sinfulness. "The heavens," said he, "are not pure in the sight of him whom I serve. How then shall I, a sinful man, stand before him?" As he pondered on these things, Mary, the Queen of all saints, appeared before him. "Fear not, Nicholas," she said, "all is well with you. My son bears you in his heart, and I am your protection." Then his soul was at rest, and he heard, we are told, the songs which the angels sing in the presence of their Lord. He died September 10th, 1310. Reflection. Would you die the death of the just? There is only one way to secure the fulfillment of your wish. Live the life of the just. For it is impossible that one who has been faithful to God in life should make a bad or an unhappy end. September 11th, St. Paphnutius, Bishop. The holy confessor, Paphnutius, was an Egyptian, and after having spent several years in the desert, under the direction of the great St. Anthony, was made bishop in Upper Thebais. He was one of those confessors who, under the tyrant Maximin Dia, lost their right eye and were afterwards sent to work in the mines. Peace being restored to the church, Paphnutius returned to his flock. The Arian heresy being broached in Egypt, he was one of the most zealous in defending the Catholic faith, and for his eminent sanctity and the glorious title of confessor, or one who had confessed the faith before the persecutors and under torments, was highly considered in the great Council of Nice. Constantine the Great, during the celebration of that synod, sometimes conferred privately with him in his palace, and never dismissed him without kissing respectfully the place which had once held the eye that he lost for the faith. St. Paphnutius remained always in close union with St. Athanasius and accompanied him to the Council of Tyre in 335, where they found much the greater part of that assembly to be professed Arians. Seeing Maximus, bishop of Jerusalem, among them, Paphnutius took him by the hand, led him out, and told him they could not see that any who bore the same marks as he in defense of the faith should be seduced and imposed upon by persons who were resolved to oppress the most strenuous asserter of its fundamental article. We have no particular account of the death of St. Paphnutius, but his name stands in the Roman Martyrology on the 11th of September. Reflection. If to fight for our country be glorious, it is likewise great glory to follow the Lord, saith the wise man. Please go to the side B right after the ending of the music.